Welcome to OSWR, another podcast for the radio amateur.
OSWR is a podcast about amateur radio. My dad, Rich, KD0BJT, and I, Brady, KD0BJS, will cover a variety of ham radio related topics and talk about our adventures in radio. Today is Sunday, May the 15th, 2011, and this is episode number 23.
Hi everybody, thanks for downloading and listening to the last episode. If you did, I'm sorry. That was a painful episode to listen to where I rambled on and on. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
Do you realize that's been almost a month since we did that?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. What? Yeah, it has been a month, hasn't it?
Yeah, and a lot has happened since then.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
You don't have big news to share?
Well, I don't know. You should really say
back
it.
Back away from the mic there, young man.
No, I should. Well, okay, I guess I could.
I don't know.
It seems too low.
It rang in my ears was all.
Okay, it seems too low. Anyway, you should say it. I mean,
I'll fix
the one
it later.
Put it on there. Okay.
Okay, well, the South Cars, we talked about it. It's a, they're a group, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. They have an HF net every day. Is that every day that they have that on 40?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is too.
We don't know much about the HF side.
Nope, because we deal mostly with the VoIP side, the EchoLink side. They have a EchoLink conference server. We talked about this before, and they are starting up a technician class. It's for the second year that they're doing this. They're starting it. Well, you'll be. They will have already started it when you hear this.
They're starting it in 24 minutes.
No, they already started. It's already over because it's 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is.
Yeah, so it's over.
So it's been over for an hour and 24.
So the classes will be offered each Sunday and Tuesday at 2300 Zulu. And the class this year, they'll be using the same communication scheme as last year. Unlicensed students taking the course will be connecting to a Skype host that will be manned by a licensed control operator, and that will cross-patch the Skype to the SCAR server. Node 96140 for EchoLink and 9614 on IRLP. So if you have a young ham, you can link up to that, and they can listen to the technician class. So anyway, we'll put a link in the show notes for that. But again, it's Tuesday and Sunday.
Yeah, starting today, Sunday, the 15th.
The 15th of May, 2000 plus 11.
Do you want to read the rest?
No.
It's not much. Just, I don't know. Okay, yeah.
You can.
No, I won't. It's, I don't know, it's nothing.
Yeah, there's just
yeah,
some
you went
links,
over it, most of it already.
Some links and stuff. But you were named to the South Cars staff.
Well, I suppose I was. It's not yet been updated on the South Cars website yet.
So what vital position do you hold with
the
South Cars
position.
Team?
They have all their nets, and there are section managers for all these nets, and I'm the section manager for the South Cars Pacific Coast Connection. It's just a Pacific Coast net. And,
wait. Don't you mean like, what, section operator?
Section manager, section operator.
Section manager? Manager?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
There's not too much to it.
Like
but
the big
you
cheese?
You are the manager. Yeah, I mean, you make sure there's
I'm giving you
net
grief.
Control, that, you know. All
so
that
what
stuff.
Do you do as the section manager for the... For the what now?
For the South Cars Pacific Coast Connection.
Pacific Coast Connection.
Now, I'm not next to the Pacific Coast. You know, it's a few states over. How many? Like two or three?
There's Utah, Nevada, and
California. So three over. Anyway, but they don't have a whole lot of people out west. It's South Coast, and which is, you know, like Florida and stuff like that. But this is a Pacific coast. So if there's a Hawaiian net control, that would be really good.
Yeah. Surrounded by the Pacific.
Yes. but anyway, you make sure that there's a net control for whatever for each week, and there's a backup net control, and I don't know. That's about it. Sometimes, you know, you're the backup or the net control. You just make sure that everything's ready for
that.
So
you're managing your people.
Yes, in a way, yes.
And making sure the net gets covered. When does this net run?
Well, it's every Saturday. It's 10 o'clock Mountain. What is that? Isn't that 16 Zulu?
That'd be 16 Zulu, yeah.
Yeah, so 16 Zulu every Saturday on the SCAR server there, 96140 Echolink, 9614 IRLP.
There you go. And so I could just connect it from my house.
Yes.
And check in.
Yes.
I see.
Except if you are checking in with the Echolink on your computer, they will call you. It's you don't just check in. You
do have to wait your turn.
So the earlier you get there, the better, because they call people by the order that they checked in. But we've gone over this before.
I know.
So.
But now that you're the manager, maybe people want to check in.
Oh yeah, yeah. well.
The trick is that. That you want to connect up with a repeater that's connected to Echolink, and then you'll be considered an RF station, and you don't have to wait to be called.
Because every time a link, a repeater, or a conference server is called, they'll call for RF stations anywhere, RF or smartphone users anywhere, and then you can just check in with your call sign or suffix or whatever.
Well, Brady, I'm going to be the first... Well, I'm not the first to say congratulations, but congratulations on being named the South Coast Amateur Radio Service Pacific Coast Connection Net Manager.
Well, very good. It was a good use for that clip.
Absolutely.
Gotta use those sometimes.
Let's move on.
All right. Well, let's see. Oh, yes. Yeah, go ahead. Well, I don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, what did we do next? I should say, what have we done since the last podcast?
Well, did we mention it on the...
I don't think we mentioned where we were going.
I don't think we really knew it.
Did you want to mention it?
Yeah,
Graham's here. We thought maybe he'd want to tell y'all. Go ahead, tell everybody where
we
went.
All right, well, we took... I don't know if we even knew we were going. I don't know. Anyway, we went to...
It was a last minute decision.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, but yeah. Kansas.
One state away from Colorado.
That's right. Well, South Central Kansas.
Doesn't sound like a great vacation destination.
Especially South Central.
But I listened to a podcast called The 365 Days of Astronomy, and on that podcast, I know I've mentioned that one before. It's a little 5 to 10 minute daily podcast. It's community produced, I guess you can say. So anybody can submit a show. And a gentleman submitted a show about astronomy vacation destinations, and one of them was Hutchinson, Kansas.
And you've probably never heard of that town.
It's not a very well-known town. There's a very small community college there. And what do they have there?
Well, they have two things, but the space-related one is their Cosmosphere and Space Center.
The Cosmosphere in Hutchinson, Kansas, will blow you away if you decide to go.
In the front, in the room you go into at first, the I don't know, what would you call it?
The lobby.
Yeah, the lobby. They have a real SR-71. Blackbird.
An SR-71 Blackbird. As you walk in, this thing is looming over you. It's kind of on...
like cables on the ceiling?
It's actually on those big concrete
pylon, what it is.
Or caissons, I think, are in the ground, but like these piers, kind of. And it might be on a cable in the front. I'm not sure how it's connected in the... I think it's on another one in the front.
Yeah, I think
But anyway...
I don't know.
It looms over you as you walk into this place. It is cool.
And then they also have not a real one, but a model, just to show you how big it is, of a...
But a full size.
Yeah, full size of the Endeavor, just a...
Yep, the spatial Endeavor. They have an Endeavor. They have half of it kind of model.
Yeah, it's kind of half.
The wing forms the roof of the ticket counter. It's pretty neat.
Right, it is. It's really cool.
That was our destination, but we should back up a little bit.
They also have something else in there. I forget
we
what
should back
is.
Up a little bit.
Isn't it? Well, okay, yeah, we should.
before we cover what all the fun in Hutchinson, how did we get there? We drove from Denver down to Lamar.
Yeah, when did we – wasn't it 4 in the morning or 4:30?
It was early, very early. We met my friend Rick, KC0HH, down in Lamar for breakfast.
Yes.
And then we boogied on over the Hickory House in Lamar, Colorado.
It's a pretty good place.
I think you guys got full.
Yeah, we did.
There were only two extra breakfasts.
Yeah, they got mixed up. They gave us two extra breakfasts. So.
We had to pay for them, but the boys ate them, so that wasn't a problem. And then we moved on to – well, we drove, obviously, and it was about, I think, a 6 to 8 hour drive. I'm not real sure. We stopped in all the great spots along the way.
Yeah, where did we stop, though? Because we only stopped in one big town for
– We stopped in Dodge City.
Right, for lunch.
Yeah, it was around lunchtime.
Yeah.
So Dodge City is known for Wyatt Earp and Bat Masterson. You probably didn't know that.
No, I was just thinking
famous
of Dodge
lawman
City.
Of the Old West. That's where the train was, and there was that you guys smashed
pennies.
Right,
exactly, exactly. Yeah,
and
I remember.
We bought some postcards, right. And you know.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool museum place there.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
And then we pretty much drove the rest of the way to Hutchinson. We stayed at the State Fair grounds there in Hutchinson. They have a little cabin you can rent, and it worked out great for us.
You can't rent it during the State Fair.
No, but you can rent it all the other times.
Right. So,
and it has a kitchen and a bath and beds for all of us. So it was a good deal.
Yeah, it was. It was really nice.
And it was just a few miles from the Cosmosphere.
Yeah, and we got to walk through all the State Fair stuff. I don't know, we walked around the grounds. There wasn't much, but yeah, that was a nice little cabin.
It was. And on the way in, driving in, I was able to make a few contacts. Well, one contact on the...
The Hutchinson repeater.
On the
they
Hutchinson
have like three
repeater.
Repeaters, I think.
Yeah, they do, but there's just one that's pretty much, you know, the main one.
Yeah.
So I talked with... Dwayne. I almost got it mixed up.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I'm going to forget his call sign. It was KB0FGI or something. Something along those lines.
I don't know
lines.
What it was.
But anyway, yeah, very, very nice and friendly guy there and gave me some information. And then we – anyway, the next day we went to the Cosmosphere. And, yeah, we've already started that. The SR-71 Blackbird in the lobby. There's another trainer jet in there.
Yeah, the trainer jet thing. That's the thing I was talking about. Was that a real one or just a model?
I think that was a real one. The SR-71 was also. Then
right. Yeah.
So we got our tickets. Anna wants us to read her a book.
She really likes that book too much.
So then they have an IMAX theater there, a planetarium. We saw the planetarium
show
first. Oh, yeah,
the planetarium was pretty good.
Yeah, I shouldn't, anyway, sneeze and sniffle when the mic's on. But, yeah, great planetarium show. The IMAX show was kind of neat.
Yeah, it was. It was, don't ever do it. I don't know.
It was called, Graham says, don't go to the IMAX show. Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't bad. I just, it's not just the kind of thing I would do.
It's not really my thing either. It
I
was,
shook when I got out.
You what?
I shook when I got out.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, it was Tornado Alley, I think
yeah,
it was called.
Yeah, that's what it was. And there's, it was kind of about two different tornado things. There's these, this one team that's, you know, they've got trucks with all their equipment on it, and they've got these little, did they call them pods or something like that?
Yeah, there was a group that was researching tornadoes there.
They wouldn't actually go in the tornado. They would be really near it. They would leave their pods there out in the tornado.
Yeah, it was a large group. I mean, you know, maybe, I don't know, 10 to 20 vehicles, and they would deploy around the storm where they thought a tornado would form, and they would, you know, they had radio communications. I don't think they were amateur operators. I think they had their own frequencies.
Yeah, they had radar. They had their radar thing.
Well, yeah, they had radar systems, and they had these little portable weather monitors that they could drop around the storm, and they were trying to find out what it takes to develop a tornado, what it takes for a storm to develop into a tornado.
Right.
So they were collecting a lot of data.
And that was pretty good.
I know some of the trucks had University of Oklahoma, insignias on them. So.
And then the other kind of part of that movie was there's this guy who wanted to get a picture of a tornado. And so
he was actually the producer of
the film.
The film, that's right.
He made this car. It wasn't really like a car. It was more like a tank.
It was a Dodge, had two axles in the back, so I don't know what it was, a straight truck at one time or what, but he had modified it. It looked like something out of Mad Max or something, or the Road Warrior. It was pretty wild.
It said that it had bulletproof windows, and it was like 200 miles per hour, wind speed doable. I mean, so what he would do
is... He had seating for three. There was the driver, the meteorologist, and then he sat in this turret so he could rotate his camera 360 degrees.
What he wanted to do was get a picture of a tornado. So they would...
While it went around them.
Right.
and they wanted to be in the middle of a tornado while it was happening.
So they did it eventually, but I don't know why you would do that.
Yeah, it was
interesting. I guess for some people, you know, but...
We keep skipping. I look at the list here, and we're just screwed up here.
Yeah, we did.
Anyway, we'll continue with the Cosmosphere. We'll get back to that.
Well, that was good. They have a... That was pretty good. Eventually, they got the picture. I don't know. It was interesting.
So you do that, and you spend half a day at the planetarium.
Oh, yeah, they have a really nice gift shop, and then... They have a really nice gift shop, but the real space part is...
And so then you realize, oh, we still have the museum to go to.
The museum is really good. And it's in the basement. It's just really long.
And I could not believe the amount of information that was in here. They start off with the Nazis developing the V-1 and V-2, is that right?
Yeah.
And they move, on... through history from there, the fall of...
Yeah, they had a bunch of stuff.
The fall of the Nazis, and then how von Braun came to America, and I forget who the Russians got, but they got a scientist, and then the space race was on, and the Cosmosphere in Hutchinson, Kansas has the largest collection of Russian space artifacts outside of Moscow. The place is loaded with stuff. I mean, it is awesome.
It's really big. We didn't really see all of it, I don't think.
You cannot read everything that's there in one day. I don't think it's possible.
I don't think so either. At least if you go to the movies.
But we took some pictures of a model of one of the Viking Mars.
Oh yeah,
landers.
I think it was the Viking.
We took a picture of the UHF antenna.
Yeah, and the S-band antenna, too.
That's right. So hopefully we'll get some pictures of the trip up on a Picasa album or something like that, like we did with Dayton last year.
Yeah.
And then you can take a peek at some of the stuff we saw. The three big highlights at that museum, they have the actual Apollo 13 command module. This is the mission, Houston, we have a problem. You know, where they were supposed to go to the moon, but they didn't quite make it. They had a slingshot around. They made a movie out of it. Hutchinson, Kansas has the command module that brought those three back, the actual command module. They also have the Liberty Bell. The Liberty Bell was the...
The Liberty Bell was really cool.
Yeah, it was Gus Grissom, I believe, was the astronaut, second U.S. astronaut in space. And upon splashdown, his door... blasted open just a little too soon. What happened?
He almost drowned, but he got out. But
that's right.
The thing sank.
The module started filling up with water. He had to scramble out, and the Liberty Bell sank. It sat at the bottom of the ocean for many, many years until the Cosmosphere was able to bring it up and restore it. So they have that, the Liberty Bell there. And then one vehicle from the Gemini missions, and I forget which actual mission it is, but they have that one there too.
And then they have an original white room.
Oh yeah, the white room from the Apollo missions?
I don't know which one it was.
Yeah, I forget. The White Room. You better explain what the White Room is.
Well, it was where the... it's kind of interesting. It's just a room where they got all suited up in their spacesuits, and then they would get into the rocket from it.
Yeah.
And they have one of the original ones.
It's the room that actually the astronauts pass through when they load up onto the launch vehicle. It's the last room they see before they get into the rocket, basically. And they have the original... I think it was from the Apollo missions, the white room that was used on the Apollo missions. So that was... pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Is that...
Yeah, I think that's it for the Cosmosphere. And then, so we did that on Tuesday, was the Cosmosphere. And then Tuesday night is the local net on 2 meters.
Yeah.
I think it was 147.27.
I thought it was 147.120.
Oh, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think that's
so
what it is.
We checked into that net. That was a lot of fun, and everyone told us to go where next?
To the Hutchinson Salt Museum.
The salt mine.
We
knew about it, and we thought, well, you know, it'd be something to do.
Because we had 2 days there.
They have a salt mine that's been there for 100 years or so. It's an active salt mine. There's an actual part that's still being mined. Most of the salt is used for rock salt for roads, or it goes into those salt licks that the cattle lick on. But that place was cool. 650 feet below the ground.
Yeah, and it only takes you like 2 minutes to go down.
They have a big elevator. You jump in this thing. You get
It's not like an elevator, though. It's
like a big metal container.
Yeah, it is. It's not at all like an elevator. I mean, you open the doors. I mean, it's not covered or anything. You can see the cable it's attached to and everything. It's really cool.
Oh, yeah. If you are ever in Kansas and can spare a couple days, you go to Hutchinson. You will not be disappointed. I think the
salt mine is better, though.
We did like, well, the kids like the salt mine because it's a little better. The museum has just way too much information
It was good.
I think you guys would have liked, there's one other thing at the Cosmosphere that they had that we didn't go see, and that was it was about a 40-minute
skit,
if you want to call it, about a... you know, a scientist in the 30s working on rocket fuel, and I guess that's a pretty fun thing to see. But we didn't quite have time for that.
Yeah, so we just did the Salt Museum, but that one was really good. And before you go down, let's see, they just take you in, give you a little video and show you what it's all like, and then...
Since it is an active mine, and I think maybe even they would have to do this if it wasn't, but... you are treated like a miner. You get the a hard hat, and then this it's a device that turns carbon monoxide into carbon dioxide, and this thing is 3 or 4 pounds, and you have to wear it in case of a fire.
It's not bad. It's not bad carrying it around. It's just a little.
It was a bit much for Colby, who's 5.
Yeah. you can. 4 and under cannot go down.
Oh, yeah. 4 years and under cannot go in the salt mine. So Colby just made it. So my wife and little one stayed behind, but I took the boys down, and they had a blast.
Yeah, so anyway, that thing, you don't actually open them up because you can only use them once, but they're just for fire. They've never had to use them, and we didn't have to use them.
But it is part of the regulations, so right. You go down with that. And so anyway, really neat. You
when
go
you
down
go
there,
down, it... for a few seconds, it's still light, and then it's just total darkness.
Complete.
It's really cool. And then you get down. It only takes like 2 minutes, but it seems like less than that.
We're not talking much radio, are we?
No.
But it's worth it.
Yeah.
It was so fun. It was cool. And then down there, they have a gift shop down there.
Yeah, they do. And they've got these really cool salt rocks. Like, they're really big rocks. And they cost a couple of dollars. They're really cool.
But you get a 2-3-4 pound piece of salt.
Yeah. Oh, and then they have two other things there. There's the salt train. It's a DC train. And it just takes you around the salt.
Yeah, an electric train.
But it's all dark. It's really cool, except for the headlights of the train.
Yeah, it is very cool.
The main part has lights, but that part is dark.
Yeah, and then you ride around a section in that, and then there is a I don't know what you want to call these.
It's called the dark ride.
It's called the dark ride. They're like electric carts, the kind that you would see at
a zoo,
the zoo or something like that. Yeah, and they have a train of them, and I think there were three. Anyway, and you go around, and while you're driving around, they have set up. The lights must be on motion detectors, and as you drive around corners, there'll be things. There's lots of interesting things to see down there. The miners just, you know, would have a trash pile and a latrine area. What did they say? What goes down stays down.
Oh yeah,
they don't remove any trash. They don't remove any waste or anything like that. Not that it was dirty or anything. That's just what they did.
Yeah, and they showed how they blocked off old mines.
Right.
Mine tunnels.
Yep, and then they had areas of the mine where the ceiling actually collapses.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
And then on the dark ride, you get to get your own piece of salt.
Yeah, they pull up to a big old pile that they have there, and you can get a handful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
And, I don't know, it's really cool. We spent like 3 or 4 hours down there.
We're going to spend 3 or 4 hours on this podcast if we don't get going.
Well, we might spend 45 minutes.
So anyway, that was great fun. Also, on the net, on the Kansas local net there on Tuesday night, I think it was at 8 p.m. local time, they also told us about the free zoo there in Hutchinson.
Oh, yeah.
And that was perfect for us, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really cool. It's not a zoo with a bunch of animals from around the world. It's a zoo with animals in Kansas.
Yeah, they have basically animals that would be around that area. So there were foxes and
eagles
and deer.
Yeah, and they had a badger.
That's right. And
I couldn't take a good picture of the badger though because he kept running around. I tried.
He did not want to be there.
No, I tried though.
And they had raccoons and I think an opossum.
Yeah.
Just, it was really, really neat. They had a play area for the kids. They did have one.
Oh, yeah.
One, like, tropical room, if you will, where
there
they had some
snakes.
And they had some monkeys, some small monkeys.
Yeah, monkeys and an iguana and a turtle.
That don't belong in Kansas, but.
But they were there anyway. But yeah, it was mostly Kansas animals. Oh, they had a turkey and geese and stuff. Yeah, it was really cool.
It was a nice diversion for the kids. And while we were driving to the zoo, there's a low bridge, 11 feet 4 inches, and I don't know why I didn't stop. I broke the antenna.
Our hustler.
20 meter. The 20 meter. It's the hustler with the 54 inch mast, and then on top of that, there's a what do they call it? A resonator. That's
yes.
Right. And I broke the resonator in half. I think I can fix it. I was looking at it.
Yeah, we might be able to. See, the problem is, though, our 20-meter hamstick I broke because when you twist it on, you have to be kind of careful because you can pull the wire away from the mounting part or the screw-on part. So I broke that one, and then we drove the Hustler one. So now we don't have anything for 20 mobile.
Ah, we'll get something working again.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Anyway, our trip to Kansas did not end there, did it?
No, not at all.
We moved on. We left, I don't know, early Wednesday or Thursday? Early Thursday.
Yeah, early Thursday.
Pretty early Thursday morning, and we wanted to, we headed north out of Hutchinson through Salina.
Like really far north. Like instead of South Central, now you're at North Central.
That's right. And we went to a small town called...
Yeah, what is the town?
It was Cocker Springs.
Yes, that's what it was.
And it's near a reservoir. I forget which what that lake is called. I don't know if it's a lake or a reservoir, but...
Yeah, I don't remember.
It's up in northern Kansas there, Cocker Springs. And what was in Cocker Springs?
The geographic center of the 48th...
No.
The Sisal Twine, the world's... was it world's or... I don't know. I think it was the largest ball of sisal twine.
That's right. The world's largest ball of sisal twine. And we pull up to this thing. It's one of these little roadside things. Very sleepy town, Cocker Springs. And we pull up, and I get out, and there's this huge ball of twine that they have under like a gazebo. There's some benches around it and a couple of plaques, and the kids are, you know, half interested. And this lady pulls up. I remember her name, Linda Clover, pulls up, and she reaches into her trunk and pulls out some sisal twine. So the boys each got to wrap some twine onto and add to the big ball of twine.
Yeah, she lets people add to the ball. And, yeah, it's pretty cool. What was it? Like, how many feet of...
I forget. It was probably... Diameter was maybe...
It wasn't quite 10 feet.
Yeah, it was close to 10 feet in diameter, I guess. 10 feet tall. And getting bigger. Yes. They have all the stats there, but that was fun. And from there... Yes.
And then we went to the geographic center of the 48 states.
Yes, the geographic center of the 48 states, not of the 50 states, but of the 48 states, and it's near a small town called Lebanon, Kansas, and I don't know, it is the purported center of the U.S. It supposedly indicates the actual point measured by a survey performed in 1918. In fact, the actual center is about half to three quarters of a mile away on a private farm, and the farm's owner did not want tourists trudging through his field, so the marker was placed as close as possible, and it's right at the intersection of some roads there. They have a nice little monument. We have some pictures.
Oh, yeah, we climbed up on top of it.
Yes, and so that was fun. We had lunch there. It's one of those odd little, off-the-beaten-track tourist spots.
Yes.
There was one other group there. Well, two other people there when we pulled up, and they were on their way as well.
Yeah, there
oh,
was.
And it's not to be confused with the Geodetic Center of the U.S., which apparently is where they surveyed the U.S. from, perhaps in nine. Now I don't remember the year that they did that, but I'll put links in the show notes for both of those interesting spots in northern Kansas.
They're very interesting.
And from there, it was a relatively short skip over to an area near Smith, Kansas, where this song was written.
Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day.
Should we sing with it, Brady?
Come on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word,
and the skies are not cloudy all day.
So we'll let that play in the background. And the Home on the Range, the Higley Cabin. It's the Kansas State song. I think most people are familiar with it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Did I? I didn't really get any information on that, but I'll put a link in the show notes. But basically, Dr. Higley had built a little cabin on a little creek there, and he was inspired to write a poem. It actually started out as a poem. And
yes.
Anyway, as we were heading to the cabin, I made a contact on the on the Smith Center Kansas repeater, 146.610. Talked with N0LL. If there's any VHF contesters out there, they might recognize his call sign. We had a nice chat. He actually invited us over there. If anybody ever is through Smith Center, it sounds like he runs a store in town, perhaps. And so he's around. He'll jump on the repeater. It sounds like he's listening all day. So anyway, Smith Center. The Higley Cabin there is close to Smith Center, Kansas, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yes.
That was about it for our. From there, we pretty much went home.
Yeah.
The long way, the really long way, which probably annoyed everyone.
Yeah, I didn't mind too much.
Anna, our 1.5-year-old, was protesting over the long drive. And but I you know, we took the scenic way, so that's the way it goes. Yeah, that's about it for the trip. The only other thing about the trip that I think we should mention is the mobile software installation.
We were trying to not just any software, new operating system.
Yeah, I had installed something on our little netbook.
And the I mean,
when I say installed something, I mean another operating system in a dual boot mode. But the dual boot mode didn't take effect, and so
I really don't want to annoy or
it's okay.
Any Linux users out there, but Windows didn't come up in the bootables
It was my fault. I forget what I installed.
No, I mean, it's not that I don't like Windows. It's that Whisper only runs under Windows. There's no Linux version.
Brady wanted to do some mobile Whisper listening, and you actually did. You actually did got it working. But in order to get Windows to boot, you had to reinstall the Linux. And I kind of knew that this was going to happen, so I had put the files onto a thumb drive, a bootable thumb drive with a program called UNetBootin. For all you Linux people out there, you know what I'm talking about, or maybe you don't. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But Brady was able to do
The Linux...
The mobile Debian install.
Yes, which is actually, that was on the way out there, though.
Yeah, that was I think, between Dodge City and...
Hutchinson.
But anyway, you were able to do
that. No, it wasn't. It was between Lamar and Dodge City.
Okay.
Because you were calling Rick about Jeffrey's phone number and everything. I remember.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was the dog and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, that's a different story. We were going to take the dog to the kennel, but then our neighbor decided to watch him, and then
we forgot his phone number.
I had given him my phone number, but then I left my phone at home. So
so we had.
So I wanted to give him the phone number that we did have with us.
But we didn't know his phone number.
But luckily, my ham friends came through.
That's right. Yes. So anyway, that's what that was all about. So we installed that, and we got it all working there.
You can always get that's what hams are great for, giving favors. So Brady was able to install the Linux while we were driving down the road. And he was able to then get the boot menu working correctly, and was able to boot into Windows to do his whispering.
Yes, whispering.
Whisper. Yes. Whisper. K1JT. Whisper.
I have heard K1JT before. 20-meter whisper.
Yes, yeah. on Whisper. Yes, yeah. He of course is Joe Taylor, the who wrote the software for Whisper. Also writes
and WSJT.
WSJT and JT65. No. I think he came up with it. JT.
Yes, but. But that is under the WSJT.
That's part of WSJT. Okay.
Yes. There is a separate program that somebody else wrote that makes it's called JT65HF, and it's easier. It's just JT65, and it seems to be like simpler or something. But anyway.
Sounds like you know more than me about this subject.
There's just a little article in QSD. Anyway. We could talk about that next show.
Yeah, we have a couple shows lined up, and I see we're already 40 minutes talking about our trip.
Oh, well, that's okay.
Hope it wasn't too boring. But we were able to, before we went on the trip, we sent out the prizes from the last show. We got a couple of people with feedback. I hope everyone else got their prizes. And we come back.
Ended up sending people 3 mints instead of 2 mints.
Yeah, they don't care about that.
Yeah, but...
We need to move on. We got a lot of stuff here.
Yeah, we do. But
that I want to mention.
And it wasn't a mistake. We just had a bunch of. We decided.
If you
to give
got
them up.
Extra mints, then you it wasn't a mistake.
Yes, they're good mints.
They are. I see. There's one more pack.
Oh yes.
One more brand new pack of the new Altoids, cool honey flavor.
I think they might.
You
be
should let us know if you want one. We wouldn't be. We wouldn't be against sending some more of those out. Just let us know.
Maybe they're all gone, though. I didn't. I
they
don't
had
know.
Like a whole shelf.
I know. I
anyway,
don't know. We'll have to look. We'll have to look. Anyway.
While we were in Kansas, all those tornadoes were happening down in Alabama and Georgia, and in the southeast part of our country. And so we were, we considered ourselves, I don't know if we were lucky, but we thought, well, gosh, that was really odd. You know, we were in Tornado Alley there, and nothing happened. We had a rain a couple of days, but when we got back, I was looking at some of the coverage on the tornadoes, and there was one thing that that caught my eye was that there was a Skywarn fellow who reported a tornado near Muncie, Indiana, and his spot was being questioned by another spotter. I guess he had you know, reported a tornado on the ground at a certain time, and another spotter went back a little later and said, well, gosh, I don't see any damage. Now, I don't know one way or the other, but this was a story that ended up on YouTube, and that's why I bring it up, because it was kind of, I don't know, you know, a report can go either way, and it seemed that it was a little slanted against this this individual, KB9ZXY, from Muncie, Indiana. I forget his name. I didn't get that on my little list here. But, yeah, I thought that was interesting. Do we know anyone else in Muncie, Indiana?
Yeah, KE9V.
That's right. KE9V lives just a few miles away, it looked like, from KB9ZXY. And
maybe he knows him.
Maybe. Jeff Davis. Why do we know Jeff Davis?
Well, kind of two reasons.
We don't really know Jeff Davis, but we know of Jeff Davis.
Long Delayed Echoes.
Wonderful, wonderful stuff.
Very wonderful, especially. Anyway, and Cornbread Road.
I hope the hard drive that has those 25 episodes never dies.
I took them all off my MP3 player. They were good, especially the Explorer section. If he listens, he can know that those were good.
Yeah, they were great. We're fans.
Especially the one about Clinton B. DeSoto in, not the one in Alaska, although that one was good, but the one in South America, that one was really good.
Oh, they were all excellent. And so then he went on to write Cornbread Road and teased us with 7 episodes. And then he was bought out.
The only thing that happened was he stopped right at the good part.
Oh, Brady's still mad about that, because episode 7
we had a chance to listen to it, but I didn't want to.
Was when the, I forget the main character's name, but he joined. Ray joined CRTS.
No, I thought Ray was the leader of CRTS.
Oh, well, who's the gentleman that joined?
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway. We were all wanting to know what happened next. But, now, I cannot, this is only from memory, but I check KE9V.net every now and then, and this could have been a dream, but I don't think it was. The site changes often enough that it's never the same, because sometimes there's links to some other stories that he wrote, sometimes there's not. Right now there's not, but I don't know, maybe a month ago there was a statement on there that said Cornbread Road would be released in June or July. That's when he will regain the rights. So perhaps, I thought it was going to go to Audible. I thought that's what he said. And perhaps then they only bought the rights for a limited amount of time or something. I'm not sure, but it almost sounds like Cornbread Road, we're going to get to listen to it in June or July. And also, I mentioned on the last show about Ham Nation with on the Twit network with Bob Heil, and I saw on Twitter there that there was a message somewhere that would be starting up in June as well. So a couple things to look forward to this summer.
Oh yes. Yeah. So yeah, I hope he gets the rights to that and puts them out.
There was one other thing on the – I know I mentioned it last time about Bob Heil. There was the twit.tv it was Triangulation, where Leo Laporte and Tom Merritt – I forgot his name – interviewed or had a discussion with Bob Heil. I put a link for that. They also had the Heil Sound Amateur Radio Party from the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters Convention. So that was a special, and I'll put a link to that if you want to listen to that. That was pretty interesting too. Bunch of bunch of ham talk there. So we'll put a link to that. And I don't know. We'll talk about this next time.
Yeah, we have a few things for next.
Yeah, time. there's a list, but we'll just stick with the audio stuff because we had some more audio discoveries, didn't we? One of them we might have mentioned before, but yeah. We'll start off with that one. Go ahead.
The Brighton Boys in the Radio Service.
Brighton Boys in the Radio Service on archive.org. It's actually a LibriVox recording, but it's a story about what?
Well, it's, let's see, there were three people, weren't they?
Yeah, three or four. I think there was four. Four friends?
I thought it was three at first. I don't know.
Well, at any rate, World War I and some three young lads were in the army as...
Radio
or Navy, or maybe Navy.
I think it was. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, well, we'll give you a little taste here if I can find it. I don't know where it is.
Well, anyway, it was a bunch of... radio stuff and, telegraph and some other stuff.
Yeah, and it's, an audio story and pretty good here. Let's see. I think I can add the clip real quick and give you a listen.
Chapter 1 of The Brighton Boys in the Radio Service. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Tom Clifton. The Brighton Boys in the Radio Service by James R. Driscoll. Chapter 1 for Uncle Sam. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their... It was that old practice sentence of typists, which is as old as our typewriting machines, and Joe Harned seated...
Okay, well, it goes on from there, and you get the idea. So that's has to do with radio.
Yes, it does.
So we'll put a link for that there if you want to listen to that. And when we were going out to Kansas, I like to give this stuff the kids things to listen to. The trip goes much better if I do. I bought Graham a little MP3 player. Brady already had one, and then. Colby, my 5-year-old, would share with Graham or whatever. But so I was looking for some stuff for them to listen to, and I stumbled across this one right here. Oh, I better turn it up.
Adventure and Ingenuity by Francis Lovell Coombs. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer... please visit LibriVox.org. This recording is by Mark Smith of Simpsonville, South Carolina. The Young Railroaders by F. Lovell Coombs. Chapter 1, One Kind of Wireless. When, after school that afternoon, Alex Ward waved a goodbye to his father, the Bixton station agent for the Middle Western, and set off up the track on the spring's first fishing, he had little thought of exciting experiences ahead of him. Likewise, when 2 hours later a sudden heavy shower found him in the woods.
Oh, but he found all kinds of adventure, didn't he?
Yeah, it was. That was really good. How there were like 23 episodes, and one of them was a two-part.
Yeah, 22 chapters with, or 23, something like
or
that.
Something like and, that. Anyway. They were really good.
These kids have the knack.
Yes. There was two and then three. So there were three, I think.
So the story is about...
wireless, really. Wireless young, with the railroad.
Well, no, telegraph.
Well, yeah, it wasn't wireless. It was telegraph.
It was telegraph. The first chapter was called One Kind of Wireless, but you'll have to listen to find out why.
And so, there was other stuff, too. It wasn't all telegraph.
There was some detective work.
Yeah, yes, there was.
Some
but
cameras.
It was mostly railroad.
Anyway, these young kids, 14, 16 years old, working on the telegraph, on the railroad, and running into all sorts of excitement.
Yeah.
So, if you listen to audio while you're driving around, that's a great story. All right, Father's Day's coming up.
Oh, except, well, I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't listen to it if you can't wait very long.
Because, oh, yeah, it's one of those, isn't it?
Yeah.
It you want to listen to the next one.
Right.
And the next one.
Right.
I listened to them while I was trying to get to sleep one night.
Well,
I listened to about half of them.
Well, maybe if you could listen to one at a time, then it wouldn't be too bad. Because they aren't really continued like Cornbread Road is.
No, they're not. They're not. They kind of are little stories unto themselves. They do fit together, however.
Yeah, they do.
It, you know, kind of in a loose way. But really, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it is really, really good. So, anyway. Maybe you could put them on a disc for your dad. He might enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, because Father's Day is coming up. And what else might you do for dad on Father's Day?
Well, the ARRL Elmer Award.
If your dad happens to be a, you know, the guy who got you into amateur radio, Brady got me this, apparently at the ARRL website. Oh, I wish I had that clip. I recorded, if anybody listens to the ARRL
audio news.
And I don't mean to poke fun at it, but the first time I heard it, I kind of laughed. I forget her name. It's K1SWF? I don't know. She says, ARRL. Anyway, never mind. But they have an Elmer Award that you can print out. Or do they send it to you?
They send it to you.
They send it to you. So you order this thing. Did it cost anything?
No.
It was free?
Yes, it was.
Shipping?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
go
pretty good. It's
ARRL.
It's ARRL and then under content, awards.
Awards?
Yes.
Brady, how did you find out about it?
I was just looking on the ARRL site under the awards.
He sent this to me for my birthday.
Yes.
For my birthday.
They got the date wrong, I think, though. They did, actually. It says January 1st instead of March 27th, but anyway.
Oh.
I mean, instead of March 9th.
March 9th. Well, that's okay.
Right. Yes.
I didn't notice. I was just, I was flattered.
Yes, yes. I think that's because I ordered it a year, like at 2010 or something. And so, I don't know.
It doesn't have to be for Father's Day. It could be for any Elmer that you've had, anybody who's helped you out, you can send them that award. I thought that was really neat.
Yes, it is.
Another piece of paper you can put up on your wall is the Mars ham thing.
Oh, yeah, you should go ahead with that. You did most of that.
And you don't have to be a ham to do this. This was on all the news services a couple weeks ago, the amateur radio news services. They're sending up a rover, I think, to Mars.
Rover.
A Mars rover. And they're going to put a chip on there with people's names on it. And you can fill out the online form with your name. And a lot of hams, I guess, have been putting their call signs. So I did this for me and Brady. And then I added my kids and my wife to it as well. So, and then they send you to a page where you can print out a certificate, and it says your name will go up to Mars or whatever. So it's fun to do, and you know, if your wall is bare, you can print this thing out and stick it up there. The link will be in the show notes.
Yes, yeah,
here's,
that is pretty cool.
The next thing, and we got to move along fast because this is going to be a long show again. But the next thing is another thing we've wanted to talk about for a long time, and it's a website called
Radio Reference.
Radio Reference is a website where it's a frequency lookup site. I don't know how quite to explain it. It's a scanner site. It's a ham radio site. They have.
It's not only ham radio though.
It's everything. It's
police,
if you want to look
fire.
Up a local frequency, you can probably find it there. They have a bunch of streaming feeds. So, for instance, in our local area, someone has set up a radio that then sends the audio through the internet to Radio Reference. And there's a couple of repeaters, local repeaters, that are streaming online. There are a couple of I think Boulder County Sheriff. Anyway.
I thought there was fire too.
Yeah, I think the fire is on there. And so anyway, you can listen to all these different things. And one of the things that's on there, this was featured on the Rain Report. If you haven't heard of the Rain Report, that Radio Amateurs
Information Network.
Thank you. With Hap Holly. I don't remember his call sign. Been around a long time.
K something 9 something something B or something like that. I don't know.
Exactly. Anyway, this show, it has been around a long time. It's a great show. The link is on the lowswr.com site there. Give that a listen. It's much better than our show, I gotta say. But this famous or infamous Los Angeles repeater was featured on the Rain Report. They actually interviewed the new owner of this repeater, the 147.435 megahertz machine in Los Angeles. It is not for the faint of heart, I will tell you right now. But you can listen to it at Radio Reference, and we'll put a link in the show notes for the Radio Reference site, maybe even to this particular machine here. Apparently, they have all sorts of characters on here. I've listened to it for a little bit. And, I don't know if I'd let Brady listen to it. they don't follow the rules there. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
You might have listened to it for a little bit, but...
I don't know, maybe.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah, I think they were talking about how bad ICOM radios were, something like that.
Think a lot of times it's okay, but I guess I've heard that they can get pretty riled up. I guess if you listen during the day, it might be all right. So, a little bit of sad news. Some of you who've been around a while and maybe were shortwave listeners might have heard the DX Party Line on HCJB. Well, that is about to end. That's been going on for 50 years, and I think it's actually this week will be the last DX Party Line. I listened to it in podcast form. I think there's a link at lowswr.com. And, so that's going to be ending. I actually heard about HCJB with I mentioned it in a show a long time ago. Come up to this mountain, a little audio tape set that my wife got me, but told the story about Clayton Howard. And he was one of the – he was actually, I think, the original host for DX Party Line. And a big part of HCJB down in Quito, Ecuador. And he passed away a couple months ago. So that's sad news.
Yeah, I think I remember that tape. I think I listened to part of it.
Did you listen to it? That was with Clarence Moore,
right,
who developed the cubicle quad. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because, so.
Yeah, they developed it because the Yagis in the thin air, wouldn't the ends of...
Yeah, there was arcing going on.
Right.
The high voltage at the ends of their beam that they had was causing a little light show.
So they made the quad.
So yeah, Clarence Moore sat down and figured out that a cubicle quad would work a lot better.
Yeah.
Or maybe just the quad, or I don't know if he made the cubicle... Well, anyway.
Anyway.
I think he did.
Yeah, I would... Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for this show.
Yes,
we've got a bunch of stuff we're going to talk about next time, a bunch of stuff that we skipped. There's some amateur radio software out there. There's a new Senate bill that's what you want to hear from me, a new Senate bill.
We're going to have a two-hour-long podcast next.
What else here do we got? Some Craigslist stuff that we want to talk about. Oh.
Oh, yeah. The Ham Whisperer software.
Yeah, there's a site, Ham Whisperer, out there.
I guess it's not software.
And it's a site, yeah. But that helped some friends of ours get licensed, actually. So that's an interesting story. Oh, there's an ICOM giveaway going on. The RSGB firing? I wanted to talk about that. a couple things that I ran across. Some stories that... That sparked some interest from the last week. Okay, anyway, that's about it. So, everyone, I hope you have a great week. And I don't know, what else do we have? That it?
Yeah, so 7-3s from Brady, KD0BJS.
And Rich, KD0BJT.